Honey, pause for a sec. That's an eel? Welcome to The Spinal Frontier, a podcast where we speculate as to why Star Trek aliens are the way they are. I'm Kelly, she, her.
And I'm Aaron, they, them.
So today we decided we're going to talk about parasites. This is something I feel like Star Trek doesn't always fully grok, and we'll talk about that. So a parasite is an organism that lives off of another organism, specifically one species that lives off of another species, and it has to be to the host species' detriment. So if the parasite is not making the host's life worse somehow, it's not technically a parasite. There's other ways of kind of interacting with each other. So there's a mutualism where it's mutually beneficial, and then there's something called commensalism, which is the host, it makes no difference to the host.
So like the host doesn't suffer any adverse effects and the parasite gets to live.
Yeah, it's beneficial for one, it's totally neutral for the other. Okay. That's a commensalism. So what parasites in Star Trek did you want to talk about?
Okay, so there's a lot, but for me, when you say parasite in Star Trek, the very first thing that comes to mind is there's a season one episode called Conspiracy, where these parasites are attaching to people's brainstems and taking them over. Yes. And they take over Starfleet Command, and there's this whole like Picard has to be on the down low and infiltrate,
right,
you know, the base. And yeah, that's the first thing I think of. But
there's a lot of neural pincer guys, yeah, as parasites. That's kind of the Trek shorthand for a parasite.
So looking into this, like, Star Trek really does seem to like neural parasites, which they define as any parasites that tap into the body's nervous system, so yeah, spinal cord, brain, whatever, to control their bodies.
In through the ear, generally.
Yeah, like in the Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
So the original series had something similar to the TNG one. Mm-hmm. Some neural parasites that looked like they went to the dollar store and bought like fake barf.
Oh, yeah.
You remember playing with that when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah. And so that's what this looks like. They just kind of like tape it to the actors' backs. And they're like,
don't they like wing themselves about? It goes flying somehow. Oh, but yeah. I don't really know how it like does that.
Oh, there's a guy off screen just tossing it like a frisbee.
Okay, but like, I'm talking about physiologically. Like, were this a real parasite, I don't understand how it would yeet itself onto a host.
I have no idea, but
I haven't seen the whole episode. I've just seen stills.
Oh, it's a great episode. It's very silly.
You know, I don't TOS. Not on purpose. I just haven't.
Yeah, that's true. We haven't watched TOS together.
No.
We should do a best of marathon sometime. But anyways,
this is always our consummate plan in our house. It's like, I know, let's watch more Star Trek.
Yeah, we're getting off topic. But also the other neural parasite I'm thinking of is Lower Decks, the Guga that attaches to Boimler.
You mean the other pincer-like worm thing?
Yeah. Yep.
Morphology aside, the pincer thing aside, I really do appreciate the fact that the parasites in Star Trek are doing what real-world parasites often do, which is to alter their host's behavior to further the parasite's life cycle.
Oh, so there are real parasites that do that?
Yeah, so that's a major point of neural parasites. So the ones that infect, it's mostly studied in insects because it's kind of easy to do, but we've got things like hairworms that get into insect brains like crickets, and they get into terrestrial insect brains and make the cricket, for example, just obsessed with going in the water. It wants to go in the water so bad, it forgets everything else, wades out into the water, drowns, and or gets eaten on the surface by a fish. And the hairworm's life cycle after it's in the insect requires being in an aquatic environment. So basically, these weird little microorganisms have evolved these really crazy multi-step life cycles that require them basically to drive other organisms as vehicles to the different places that they want to go.
That's so weird.
Yeah, so they'll do that. There's also a common one we talk about is in zombie ants. So the cordyceps fungus will infect an ant host, a trap, I think it's a trap jaw ant, And it just this ant has this really strong, giant mandibles, these big jaws that it clamps down, and it convinces the ant to crawl up a plant about 25 centimeters off the ground. It's very precise because mm-hmm. it's the right temperature and humidity for the fungus to grow. And then it says, oh, ant, grab onto the bottom of this leaf with your jaws. Once it does that, then the fungus kills off the ant. So it basically just drives it and puts it in park.
Oh, wow.
Until the fungus can fruit and then mm-hmm. rain down spores on all of the ants below. And it starts all over again.
Wow. So this is cordyceps, right?
This is cordyceps. And it's
a fungus? Okay.
Are there any Star Trek parasites that like spore out or like do I didn't spores. Find anything like that. Or just like if they infect not by touch but just by like kind of passively infecting, or is it all worms?
I think it's all worms. I think Star Trek really likes the visceral body horror of having a worm go up your nose.
Yeah, I think that's their main visceral body horror too. They don't really do a whole lot of other scary gross stuff. It's really just
there was that episode where everybody de-evolved,
which we'll talk about later. Yeah. But yeah, so those are the kind of really big gory real life parasites that I can think of. Another interesting life cycle involves humans. I was trying to think about human parasites, and like we could talk about tapeworms or whatever, but I was interested in toxoplasmosis because that is something, if you're familiar with pregnant women can't change kitty litter.
I feel like I've heard that, yeah.
Yes, and this is because if you get an active toxoplasmosis infection while you're pregnant, you can pass that on to the fetus and it could have birth defects. And so toxoplasmosis is one of those that has multiple steps in its life cycle, and it has an intermediary mammal that it needs to get to before it gets to a cat. So we have toxoplasmosis infections in rodents that are kind of bold. They aren't afraid of cat urine. They're actually attracted to it. That's how you know you have a sick mouse, because it wants to be the toxoplasmosis wants the mouse to be eaten by the cat so it can infect the cat.
Okay.
And so cats can get it and then give it to the humans that are scooping its poop, because it's gets into the digestive system as well as the central nervous system. So what's interesting is like, why would it infect a human? And I looked into it. A lot of this information is coming from a really neat review paper in Frontiers in Psychology. I think I linked it in the show notes because it was just a really neat read, all of these different parasites. But in humans used to be pretty ready prey for leopards and other large cats.
Oh, yeah. I believe it.
And so toxoplasmosis can infect us so that we can give it to big cats.
Okay.
Evolutionarily is what the argument is. And they've found that juvenile male primates with toxoplasmosis in areas where leopards are their predators exhibit really risky, really reckless behavior that would get them eaten by a leopard.
So like when you say reckless behavior, do you mean skydiving or do you mean like seeking out leopard pee?
I don't really know.
Okay.
But it's more like being out and about and not protecting themselves against the leopard.
Okay.
In one way or another. So it seems like primates can also get toxoplasmosis in order to complete the life cycle, but in leopards.
All right.
Some toxoplasmosis has high aspirations, I guess.
Related
yes.
to the neural parasites. And well, I think it is a neural parasite, but I just had this as...
It is, because we've been kind of hinting at this.
Probably one of the most famous ones is the SETI eel from Wrath of Khan.
Which is not an eel. That's not an eel, folks.
I've watched enough of your research to I think I can identify an eel, and that is not an eel.
Yeah, I actually am soon to graduate from a lab that mainly studies moray eels. That is super not one. Please talk to me about the SETI eel a little bit more.
So it looks like a big bug, and it's got these armor plates on its back, and it carries its larva in between the armored plates. And then those larvae, when they mature a bit to like go out on their own, they find a host to. And the way this was demonstrated is that crawls in Chekhov's ear and attaches to his brain, And then when it's there, it does something, releases some chemical to make the host very passive and suggestible.
Okay.
So then, like, the villain, Khan, tells him to do all this stuff, and he does it because...
Is that the same one that makes them tell, like, it's kind of a truth serum one, or is that the other one?
Oh, there's another one called a Centaurian slug, I think.
Which, guess what, is not a slug at all.
It's not a slug at all.
It's cute. It's a nod to the SETI eel.
Yeah, it is. It's from the 2009 Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
that it goes in. I don't know if they put it in his mouth or in his nose.
I blocked it out. Yeah,
it's gross. But anyways, it acts as a truth serum.
Yeah. So...
I think it's similar.
Yeah, it had a similar functionality on purpose. And what I thought was interesting about these guys is that they have a very anthropogenic or human specific effect, and
which is weird for creatures that evolved on a planet where there's no humans.
Yeah, well, because the SETI eel is supposed to interact with the SETI bison, right?
Oh. Interesting.
Oh, I read into this, and there's an organism called a SETI bison, uh-huh. that the SETI eel, which, you know, not an eel, is supposed to infect, but it's more of a commensalism. It doesn't really bother the bison either way, mm-hmm. but I think the bison go extinct, and so the SETI eels need somewhere to go. What I think is interesting about the SETI eel and Centaurian slug, mm-hmm. is their very specific effect on their host organism and how it influences them to do things in not such a crazy fatal way as, like, the cordyceps fungus and the hairworm and stuff. There's a caterpillar that will drug ants into protecting it. So caterpillars aren't only preyed upon, they also can be the parasite, and so they excrete this kind of sugary substance that the ants really, really like,
mm-hmm.
and so the ants will all crawl around it and hang out and drink the Kool-Aid, basically, and protect the caterpillar from and then it turns into a cocoon or whatever, and mm-hmm. and so the ants will protect it until it's ready to go. So
cool,
that's an interesting thing. So I want to keep talking about parasites, but just order of business, do we have anything from sponsors or
well, yeah, we do, but before we run the ad, we'd like to share a trailer for our friend's podcast. Here's Jeff Aiken of the Starfleet Leadership Academy.
Leadership, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starfleet Leadership Academy. Its ongoing mission to develop leaders through Star Trek, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. A Star Trek podcast told through the lens of leadership development. Subscribe today, the Starfleet Leadership Academy.
So there's another parasite from the Next Generation that I thought is interesting. They're called the Tarkan. They're a species that reproduces by embedding a parasite into a host's thymus.
So do they... They're infecting adults, right?
Yeah.
So the thymus is a gland in your kind of sternum area, in mm-hmm. your chest, that's only really active before puberty.
Interesting.
So it helps kind of boost the immune system,
mm-hmm.
while you're growing and still developing immunities to things.
Right.
So you don't die while you're a juvenile. And so once you hit puberty and once you start maturing, it starts being replaced by fat. Like, So it's part of your endocrine system and it's part of your lymphatic system, but it's not technically active in adult humans.
So, like, what qualifies as an adult? Because, like, I'm wondering if
post-puberty. So what happens with the Tarkan?
So one of these things infected Geordi pretty early in his career. So, like, he might have been, like, just out of the academy even. I think it was an ensign, so, like, 22, 23.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if that's helpful at all in terms of thymus timeline.
No.
Okay, so yeah, so none of this would work.
Well, maybe not, but it's just like it's feeding on the remnants of an organ, not an active organ.
Okay.
Yeah, or gland.
Anyways, so this parasite lay dormant in his system for a long time until it reactivated sometime in like season 3 of The Next Generation.
Okay.
And it hijacked his thymus to spread genetic instructions to transform him into a Tarkane, one of these aliens.
What do they look like?
They look like a guy in a root suit.
In a root suit?
Yeah, have you seen those? That's like a full body suit, and it even covers your head.
Oh, so it's kind of, well, they're not hairy like that, right? Doesn't he kind of turn into a lizard thing, sort of? He gets kind of scaly, and then he has these bioluminescent, looks like he's permanently covered in lightning.
Yeah, because they hit him, you can only see them under UV light.
Which is super interesting. Yeah.
So they hit him with the UV light, and like he literally just looks like a guy in a full body suit that they've painted little veins on.
I think I heard that this was the most complicated makeup of all.
Really?
Of TNG. Because they had to, because he has yellow eyes, right?
Yeah, they give him contacts and stuff.
They give him contacts, but they also, like, this is all under an optometrist direction, because they mm-hmm. want to make sure they're protecting his eyes, because they give him crazy contacts all the time, right? So like,
yeah,
or regularly. So there have been many professional doctors in charge of LeVar Burton's eyes.
That's good.
But so not only did they give him the yellow contacts, apparently they put the same contrast dye in his eyes that they use to check for glaucoma.
Oh, cool.
You know that stuff that makes mm-hmm. you cry yellow at the optometrist? They put that in there too.
Okay.
So to make his eyes as yellow as they could possibly get them.
They've actually never done that to me.
That's true.
I get the puff test every time.
Oh, that's a separate thing.
That's a separate thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, then never mind.
So I just thought that one was a really interesting one, because I've yet to see a parasite that goes so far as to change the morphological characteristics. Mm-hmm. It's usually a change in behavior. So I thought that was interesting. And I'm not quite convinced that it's strictly a parasite, because I don't know if that's any worse for the host. I wonder if it's different as opposed, like, is it hurting Geordi?
it's turning his body into an alien and kind of like writing over his consciousness with something else.
Oh God, this is something we did not think about in the show notes, but so that means the Borg is a parasite also.
Ooh, interesting take.
That's what that would mean.
Like a nanomachine parasite, but
yeah. Well, the Tarkan is a tiny parasite that mm-hmm. grows in a gland or whatever and develops, and basically it's basically terraforming, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But,
that's
but
what
on an individual body level.
Oh wow, now that is cool.
We should think more about this. Yeah, like, maybe there will be a parasite, or like we should just have a Borg episode. There's too many things.
It would be
to
really
talk
good
about.
To have a Borg episode, actually.
Yeah, talk about body horror. Well,
yeah,
but we're not going to talk about that anymore. What I did want to touch on before we go is, what is not a parasite? So, mm-hmm. again, a parasite is an organism that preys on a host to the host's detriment. Mm-hmm. It usually makes the host infertile or steals its energy to... Yeah, I don't even want to go into it, because there's so many gross things that can happen. But it's not technically a parasite if it benefits the host or mm-hmm. if it doesn't do anything to the host.
I see people talk about Trill symbionts as being parasites a lot, and that's not correct.
That's not correct. It's a mutualism. Mm-hmm. I would argue it's a mutualism anyway, because the Trill co-evolved with the
symbionts
which, do they have an actual name?
No, they just call them Trill symbionts.
Yeah. Which is kind of funny, because the Trill are the more persistent of the two species that interact.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about symbionts someday. Maybe let's fold the Borg into the symbiont thing, because technically they do persist together.
Yeah.
We'll have a Borg debate. Yeah, I'm excited about this. The Trill symbiont and other symbionts mm-hmm. aren't theoretically parasites. There are a couple of cheeky mentions also of fetuses and children being parasites. They're not exactly, because your biological directive evolutionarily is to pass on your genes, mm-hmm. and that is what a fetus is. It is passing on your genes to a physical next generation. Oh, she said the name of the title of the thing. But speaking of TNG, there is another quote-unquote parasite in an episode called Cost of Living. It is a nitrium parasite from an asteroid that starts munching on the D, or on the Enterprise D.
Yeah.
So a parasite needs to have like a living host, and the Enterprise is not technically alive. And there's also another, the silicon-based parasite that eats duranium and that chews on some couplings on a different ship. Again, not alive. So I don't think they're parasites as much as they're just metallivores. They eat metal. And that they're
pests.
Just, they're pests.
Yeah.
But that's not the same thing as a parasite. So that is my soapbox, and I am sticking to that. But I feel like we need to keep going with this topic. I'm really excited to talk more about symbionts and why Borg might be a symbiont and not a parasite.
Okay. Well, I'm very much looking forward to that, because that is a hot take.
I have hot takes. You know this.
I do know this.
Because I know a lot about biology and fair to middling amount about Star Trek.
Okay. Well, if you liked this episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. And especially if you're using Apple, please, please rate us 5 stars and leave a review so other people can find us. If you didn't like it, maybe listen again just to make sure.
Yeah, just double check. You can always follow us on Instagram at Spinal Frontier Pod and on Twitter at Spinal Frontier. We're always looking forward to your comments and questions. Okay, honey, you can press play.